At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, today's podcast is brought to you by Lousy Weather Media Basement Comedy Show 4 featuring Chris Klem, AJ Giorgi, Sean Sullivan, with special musical guests, of course, Bob Camparta. It's on June 13th. Come see it live in the basement. If not, you can listen to it on www.lousyweathermedia.com. Now enjoy the show.
Would you like to read a book? No, I don't.
I can't read.
Hello and welcome to this week's installment of I Can't Read. I'm Paul.
I'm Tony.
And we have with us again
Willis Gordon.
All right. Sad news today in the community of music. B.B. King died. Hit us, Willis.
Yeah, man.
I'm gonna crack one for him.
There it is.
He did love Red Bull.
He did. I mean, he lived in Vegas for the last part of his life, so I mean, like, he couldn't avoid Red Bull, I'm sure. Just cans of it falling from the sky. But it's like there's breast implants and Red Bull falling from the sky. What's happening here?
What a great age.
Right. But no, I, you know, my heart's really heavy about this because I'm a, you know, blues and rock and roll are my religion. And that guy played such a huge role in both of those genres, oddly enough. Because it's very weird when you find one person who can personify an entire genre of music.
Yeah.
It's very rare when you can have that. It's like, you know, some people are outside of their genres, like, who are so big that they kind of, even if you don't technically like that genre, you still like them. And BB was sort of that. James Brown, Ray Charles, and Johnny Cash come to mind, where you're like, I don't like country music, but I like Johnny Cash.
Right. Yeah.
I don't like, you know, funk or soul music, but I like James Brown. B.B. King was one of those guys where, you know, he was partial. He had one foot in that camp, but he also had the thing when you talk about the blues, B.B. King's name comes up, which was really funny because when I pulled up in here, I was listening to Where the Light Is, John Mayer, and he takes a lot of B.B.'s tones on that record. And I was listening to Out of My Mind, which is just a straight blues track. And so it was an instrumental, so he had no idea who it was playing. I had my windows down and I rolled up this blues playing. And he walks in and he goes, that was some cool music you had played. And I was like, yeah, man, you know, love the blues, all that other stuff. And as the elevator doors were closing, he was asking me, oh, you heard about the King, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I did. He's like, all right, man, well, have a good one. Stay safe. Boom. And the door closed. And I was just like, God damn, I said the word blues and the man's name came up. It was just, you know.
If that's not a natural, like, connection.
Right.
If you've ever seen one.
Yeah. So it's amazing how universal the man was. But you find things that are, you know, sometimes when we find things that are universal, like songs or people or things like that, that are so universally famous, it's hard to see things that are so universally recognized and famous and still universally loved. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Usually when you hit, like, a certain spot, people start to hate you.
Right.
Like the Dane Cook like,
right.
type thing.
Yeah, that syndrome.
Yeah.
But there's, I mean, you have to have at least, even if you're still genuinely popular, you have to have at least some bit of like notoriety or something like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles, biggest bands in the world of their time, Led Zeppelin, but someone was kicking back against them somewhere.
Right.
You know, it was, would you let your daughter marry a Rolling Stone? Or there's these long-haired fucking kids. Oh, the Beatles are bigger than Jesus. Oh, fuck them. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there was at least some sort of, you know, controversy or notoriety going on, but B.B. King is so fucking famous. So popular, so well-known. And yet so well-loved universally. It's just, it's an anomaly. We'll never see that again. It's insane. We will never see something like that again. Because by the time mass media caught up, B.B. King was already 20 years in the game.
Right.
And was already a legend.
It's probably a good thing to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're already established by the time, like, think about, like, let's say, like, you're famous and you're a techie type person and the tech community necessarily doesn't owe you anything, per se,
yeah,
if you come out today. But let's say you're a tech person who's made huge innovations, you've done that stuff. and you did it in like from 1985 to 1994.
Yeah, you're part of the pillars, biggest part of the building blocks of it. They owe it to you to get right to where they are now.
And so, but you still kept putting out good products, good shit, and you adapted to the internet. So the internet basically owes you a debt of gratitude.
Right.
And not only do they owe you a debt of gratitude, but they appreciate you, because there's no trashing somebody who was there before the sun clicked on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, it was one of those things. Like, B.B. King just seemed to be one of those things, you know? Like, he was always there and he always will be. And now it's so weird that he's gone. It's like, what the fuck? What? Where'd he go? What happened? He was just here a minute ago.
Yeah.
You know? And it was very strange because, you know, I'm going to make some recommendations if you guys don't know his music. And I know Tony told me earlier, so he doesn't really know just the classics, you know, The Thrill Is Gone and Sweet 16 and stuff like that. The recommendations I would say are a compilation record called Riding With The King with him and Eric Clapton, which is excellent. It's so good.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
It is so good. And then there are two live albums that, in my opinion, are in. B.B. King has two of the top 10 greatest live albums of all time. And on the expanded edition of one in the top three for me, he's on the expanded edition of Get Your Ya-Ya's Out by the Rolling Stones, because he opened for the Stones in 1969, which, by the way, huge list, because everybody talks about, you know, all white British bands not taking credit for, you know, or not giving credit to the black performers that they took their stuff from, which is bullshit when it comes to the Rolling Stones, because they had Howlin' Wolf at the BBC with them opening up for them in 1964.
I mean,
they had Chuck Berry opening up for them. In 1969 alone, you had B.B. King, Ike and Tina Turner, and Chuck Berry on the bill opening up for them in different parts of the country. That's fucking insane. Just wow.
That sounds fantastic.
Like, that's incredible. Like, that would be like in 2005, somebody like Usher doing a tour that was really, really big. Like, or actually, like whenever Confessions was big, what was that 2004, like 2003, 2004,
yeah,
like when Usher had that big
one?
And he's just like, oh, by the way, who's coming on this tour with me is just Prince, Michael Jackson, and Stevie Wonder. And he's like, all right, that's cool.
Like, bringing these guys along.
Yeah, like, these are the guys who inspired me to be who I am, so here you go. Like, fuck!
When did he first start recording?
B.B. King, God. Because it was on and off. It was on and off in, like, the 50s and the 60s and things like that. But he would do things in, like, the 1940s and the 1950s, but it was in the 50s when things started to really, like, take
off.
Okay,
so it was 40s, 50s that he had started.
Because he started... He like walked. I think he rode his bicycle to Memphis from Mississippi.
Wow.
Holy shit.
And then
that's
like
quite the trek.
Yeah, and then like he played there for like 6 to 8 months, and then he like came back and like worked driving tractors on this farm where he grew up, cuz he was a sharecropper.
Yeah.
And then he came back and he like saved up some more money. And I guess he like crashed a tractor or some shit like that. Like he had like got off the tractor, turned the thing off, was walking away, and then the thing clicked back on and like started rolling forward and ran into something and broke. And he started running, and he said he just ran and he never went back. He just like went to Memphis again.
Forrest Gump did.
And he was like, fuck it, I'm just going to Memphis. And he went there again, learned some more stuff. One of the guys up there, I'm trying to remember who his cousin was. I'm trying to remember his name. It's something goofy as shit. But he played slide. And B.B. could never catch slide guitar. He never knew how to play slide guitar. But
slide guitar seems ridiculously complex. Like, just
it's
I don't know if it's expressionistic. That's why
it's expressionistic for one, but two, because I play slide, but I also learned by watching guys like Ron Wood and Mick Taylor, who soloed in standard tuning, which
yeah.
is really fucking weird.
I was going to ask you if you tune to drop D when you do slide and stuff,
well,
so you have that bar chord.
Sometimes I do, like, I like to do open G, I like to do open E.
Uh-huh.
I haven't really fucked around too much with drop D.
Dadgad's cool, D-A-D-D-A-D.
Yeah, that's a cool one. But, like, those are cool tunings to do stuff in, like, Rycooter, you know, does amazing stuff on slide. But I learned from them, and then I got the concept. You know what I mean? I got that down, and I just kind of figured it out. But he said he never really figured out the concept, so he just tried to make his guitar sound like the slide. So that's where you get that famous B.B. King vibrato from, because he's trying to sound like expressionistic like the slide.
Oh, cool.
And it's insane, because there are billions of guitar players in the world. However, there are very few who can hit one note and you know exactly who it is. Like, B.B. King will hit one note, and you'll just hear, like, one high-pitched, super vibrato note, and you'll be like, that's B.B. King. I know who that is immediately. And, like, there are so many other people, it's like, you'll hear, like, a run-up, or you'll hear a phrase, or you'll hear something else, and you'll be like, oh, that's Buddy Guy, or oh, that's Keith Richards, or oh, that's Chuck Berry. One note.
Yeah.
B.B. King is just bam, sweet. Right there. And you're like, shit. And you don't even think about that until somebody says it, and then you go back and listen, you're like, oh, my God, he's right. Like, that's nuts. And the guy... He was the closest thing to a perfect player I've ever seen. My buddy Dave Marcioni and I were in a band. And we were sitting around. We were kind of rehearsing for some stuff and doing some recordings. And he was like, oh, I got this film from Zaire. And I said, oh, yeah? Because, oh, by the way, the documentary, watch the shit out of this if you've never seen it. It's called When We Were Kings. And Norman Mailer's in it, all these other guys in it. It's about the Ali Foreman fight in Zaire in 1974.
Oh, cool.
And it was just the blackness of the event. And it was like the blackness of the event, the pomp and circumstance, the spectacle of it all. And it was in the 70s where, like, the Black and Beautiful Black Power movement was going on. And it was, you know, and it was insane because it was this, it was in Zaire, which is a black run government, corrupt as shit, but black run. Don King, black promoter, Muhammad Ali, the blackest, most famous person on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And then George Foreman, who is the biggest, blackest person on the face of the earth. And so, but George Foreman, like, Ali was, you know, the man of the people, and you hear throughout the film, and if you ever watch the movie, if it gets quiet and, like, the commentators aren't talking, you'll hear the crowd going, Ali, Boumaye, Ali, Boumaye. And Ali, Boumaye means Ali, kill him.
like now, tough. Was this an outside fight?
This is this was for the heavyweight championship of the world, and Muhammad Ali did not have it. Ali had lost his title because he had because he refused to go to Vietnam, and the biggest years of his life, the most productive years of his life, were gone essentially. And he came back, lost to Joe Frazier, then he beat Joe Frazier, then he beat a couple other people. And he was going back for the title. Joe Frazier lost the title to George Foreman because George Foreman beat the fuck out of Joe Frazier. And the thing is, Frazier beat Ali by decision, but Frazier beat Ali. And how Foreman took him to school, everybody's like, Muhammad Ali's not only past his prime, but he's going to get killed.
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah.
Because George Foreman was leaving dents in the bag when he was hitting it. Just boom. Wow. And the guy would fall down. Like, you just didn't... It didn't want... And the guy was going, and just pow! And you see him hit this thing. There's a big-ass dent in the bag, in the heavy bag, and the guy fell on the ground. Like, not stage dog, he just fell. He was like, fuck! Like, it was just, he just hit
done
that
holding
hard.
This.
That's some, like, Captain America shit.
Yeah, he hit him that hard. Like, George Foreman, people always think, like, oh, this bald-headed, kind of tubby, genial, nice guy.
I think
guy.
Grill.
Yeah, this guy who had the grills. It's like, George Foreman was the meanest motherfucker on the planet for a while. And everybody thought Muhammad Ali was going to get either killed or seriously injured in that fight.
Yeah.
There's a great story about Hunter S. Thompson was sent by Jan Wenner to go cover that fight.
Didn't make it?
he went over there. Hunter Thompson and Muhammad Ali are both from Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, cool.
And Hunter Thompson used to, you know, he always make up shit, but he was talking about how they're related somehow in the blood back then. But he felt so strongly about Muhammad Ali that he just got drunk and swam in the hotel pool and listened to the fight on the radio because he didn't want to see one of his heroes get beat up. Huh. And Norman Mailer was at the fight, and a bunch of other great, you know, American icons were at the fight. And, I mean, obviously we all know what happens. He goes and he
sorry, I have the window open. Yeah. If our listeners are like, what the fuck was that? Someone peeling out really slow, I guess. Go ahead.
So there's seven rounds of everybody's like, okay, I'll, you know, and Ali has said it, I'm gonna dance, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, blah blah blah. And he's basically just hugging the ropes and with his hands in his face, and Foreman is beating the fuck out of his elbows and body and arms. For seven rounds, and everybody's like, this does not look good.
But he wasn't wearing himself out. He was just holding himself.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was the rope-a-dope. And so...
Had he done that before? Like,
no,
wearing someone
no one
till
had
they...
ever done that before.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was so crazy, because everybody's like, what the fuck happened? What's going on?
Yeah.
And then, like, round seven happened, and they started to see Foreman start slowing down. Because Ali was saying, Foreman ain't never been past round five. Like, he's been fucking people up.
Wind a giant.
Yeah, he's been fucking people up so badly that, like, he's never been past
round five. Going the rounds, yeah.
So, Mike Tyson says it best. Ali will take you out in the deep water and drown you.
Yeah.
So, he comes down there and he's like, all right, so... He's hitting him, and all of a sudden, Ali starts jumping off the ropes, pop, 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 hitting these combos, pop, 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 hitting these combos, and then, like, the round's over, and everybody goes, oh, shit, I think he's doing a thing. He's doing a thing.
Something's happening.
Yeah, and so round eight comes around. He jumps off the ropes, beats the fuck out of George Foreman, and George Foreman falls, and as he's going down, Ali's got a punch cocked, ready to go, and he just follows him. And just looks at him as he hits the ground and never throws that last punch.
That's sick.
There's so many people who just beat the shit out of you as you're on your way to the ground. Yeah. But Ali just like held that punch and just looked at him, hit the ground. And Foreman to this day says that's why Ali is the greatest. He's one of the greatest men he's ever fought and the greatest men he's ever known because he didn't throw that punch. He just had, he just held it there and just watched him fall.
And he got the 10 count on that? Or he knocked him out
cold? He got the 10 count. He got the 10 count because he tried to get up and like,
yeah.
it wasn't happening. But
that's cool to have that kind of reserve.
Yeah. James Brown, Isaac Hayes, and B.B. King played the opening concert to that.
Wow.
I mean, it was huge.
I was wondering, I was like, how do we get to boxing?
Yeah, it was huge. So Zaire 1974, B.B. King plays. It's like a 44-minute concert. You can see it on YouTube, or you can buy it. You can do whatever, because it's on the B.B. King Vivo. It is fucking incredible. B.B.'s tone, his playing, it's perfect. And not only this, B.B.'s band, I don't think, it was something crazy. Like B.B.'s band didn't fly to Africa with him, so he had like a band there who learned all this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And like, it was incredible. And then he missed one note the entire time, and that's one of three times I've ever seen B.B. King miss a note in his prime, and he went back and got it anyway. And I was like, what the fuck? we were just sitting there like, this is incredible. But live at Cook County Jail, recorded in 1970 or 1971, and then the 50th anniversary is actually this year. It's B.B. King live at the Regal, 1965, and it's 35 minutes of just mind-blowing blues music. It's fucking incredible. The man's legacy will never die. I mean, you know, The Thrill Is Gone is great and everything. You saw him on The Cosby Show when you were a kid, I'm sure. But really dig into this man's catalog and see some of the live shit, and it is amazing. He is,
fuck yeah,
he is incredible, and he will be missed. And my recommendation for movies, it's two things, well, three things, two of which have to do directly with B.B. King. So,
okay,
sounds like fucking Cibola's Pod Racer is outside right now.
Honestly, yeah, there
oh
is.
Oh my god, and dude's just parked, just kicking it. Anyways, yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, he's just rumbling.
He was
last
what 90.
He was going to be 90 in September.
Yeah, I was about to say, it said he was born in 1925.
Yeah,
that's a solid life.
And not only that, I mean, and his life as well. Oh, yeah. I think the dude had a good run.
I mean, well, he's got like some like 50 grandkids. I mean, like,
holy fuck, spreading the seed.
Oh yeah, man. Oh yeah.
All right, let's hop into genre five. Top five demonic supernatural / hell themed films.
This has to go. This goes in part with our Hellboy test of Tony.
Yeah, not.
I know there's a weird transition, but
here's the thing. Context. At about midnight, I'm sure B.B. King busted hell wide open. So if you go to jail for fucking having sex out of wedlock, I mean, he is under hell right now.
Hit me with your stone.
All right, cool. Here we go. I got kind of classics, pretty easy, simple ones you'd expect. The Exorcist.
Yeah, that's on mine.
Very evil, very cool.
The flies in that movie always, I thought it was a really cool touch, because like the evil and all that, so I like that a lot. I saw that when I was really young too, and her pissing on the floor fucked me up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was just such a weird, haunting thing. Ugh.
Yeah, them playing piano, having their little hangout.
Fuck me, Jesus Christ, or Jesus Christ fuck me, her fucking with the crucifix and the vagina.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Is bad. Any other sexy points you want to point out?
Pea soup throw up? Good.
Yeah. Linda Blair, man.
Next was on my list is Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, yeah. Why?
I love the idea of the occult.
I was about to say, because like...
Like a hidden cult that's living amongst you.
And that movie...
That creeps me the fuck out.
Literally, like, doesn't even, like, you know... I mean, like, it's all suspense building up to that one moment where, like, you fucking...
Oh, truly, it is a... I mean, and that's kind of a... I want to say, that's part of the grace of it. The first time, you're almost numb to it. You're like, yeah, this is a, they say it's horror. They say it's horrific. They say it's insane. Yeah.
Especially from what we've come
but
from,
she
too,
gets
though.
Fucked by the devil in her
yeah.
sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah. Like, that's to be rough. Inseminated in your dreams and then it becoming reality is a horrific thing to fathom.
Inseminated in dreams.
There's sickest, a black metal band.
Yeah, let's say sickest metal band ever.
And then
there's a part where I can't remember who it is, but someone drops a knife, right? It's in the scene with the baby with all the
yeah.
Someone drops the knife. The lady comes up, picks it up, and licks her finger and like mends the carpet.
Yeah.
Such a weird
That's
little
what
fucking
I mean.
Thing.
It's people you see in your everyday. And a lot of these movies on my list have a lot of, you wouldn't see them as anything special until they reveal themselves or their true nature. And
I'm about to say Exorcist. I mean, that doesn't kick off to like probably like half hour moment, right? That's like when shit starts getting really fucked up.
Yeah, but you know it's. I think you know it's coming because I think you get a prelude of what he does before. No,
you see the statue or some shit, or is that Dominion? I don't know. They made two prequels of The Exorcist. Did you catch that?
Nah,
it was the Exorcist the beginning, and there's one called Dominion or Domain.
Dominion.
Yeah, and I was, but they, I think they're the same fucking movie. They just named them differently.
Ah, that's clever.
That's yeah.
And shitty.
Yeah, very. Okay. Anyways, go ahead.
Next on my list is The Prophecy.
Hell yeah.
I enjoy the living shit out of Christopher Walken.
I was about to say
as the Archangel Gabriel. Oh,
yeah. Right.
It's enjoyable.
That movie's awesome.
And Viggo Mortensen is Satan.
Oh, yeah.
In that one. Absolutely. Eating raw hearts and just being evil as shit.
Being Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
Yeah. Just what you think he would do on a weekend. I also put The Ninth Gate.
Yep, that's on mine.
Yes, that's on mine.
Hell
that
yeah.
one is absolutely fucking fantastic.
Mr. Depp.
So fantastic.
Roman Polanski.
There's two Roman Polanskis on my list. Because Rosemary's Baby.
Ah,
nice.
Yeah. And I was trying to analyze the difference between them. I kind of paused and I was talking about Rosemary's Baby. It's because I was trying to think about the way that Ninth Gate flows, but it's a more modern film, and I think Roman
and it flows more like that movie with Tom Hanks about the Da Vinci Code. It kind of flows like that, like him trying to solve, like put all the pieces together, but it's better than that.
I think Johnny Depp has a lot more technical skill than Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks just kind of has Midwestern charm. Johnny Depp's an
trust him to do your taxes and
plays
hang
a great
out.
Cowboy.
Yeah. Tom Hanks, he could be my dad. And last on my list, it was kind of like a dead still between two. Okay. I don't know. I kind of, Devil's Advocate or...
Hell yeah, that's on mine.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I fucking love that.
Oh, yeah.
Pacino.
Look what he did to me.
Keanu Reeves isn't, like, bad in it, but he's not, amazing. He's not amazing,
he's
but he's good.
Southern twang.
He's good. He's decent.
Pacino
as the
devil and a very young Charlize Theron losing her fucking mind.
Yeah.
So good.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, she plays that. Her fucking
death
scene
is
horrendous.
That's another one. Like people realizing the normal people around them have actual demons.
I just rewatched that like a couple months ago. It was on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Oh, it's so
great
good.
Fucking film. And it kind of was even with the Evil Dead films.
Remake?
Just because. Kind of like them.
Yeah.
That remake was so good, dude.
Ah.
It's so good. You love the remake. Hey,
I do love the remake.
I would say, don't leave me hanging, motherfucker.
I wouldn't.
You know what? Here's the thing. I hated the idea of it. I'm not even going to watch it. I saw the trailer and I was like.
Oh, because it is.
And I was like,
a remake of Evil Dead?
Of Evil Dead. And I was like, and they were like serious about it. And I was like, nah.
Sam Raimi's on it.
Sam Raimi was on Spider-Man 2.
Sam Raimi
Spider-Man
was
2
Evil
was
Dead.
Good. Spider-Man 3 was shitty.
Yeah.
But Sam Raimi was Evil Dead. College, those were his films.
Yeah.
And
Evil
so
Dead
I figure if he greenlights it, he would at least say, it bears my mark of approval.
Mm-hmm.
Like Danny Boyle saying, yes, go ahead and do 28 Weeks Later. I will executive produce and manage this show.
Yeah, but like George Lucas comes back and is like, oh, yeah, it's a good idea to do these prequels like this. Yeah.
I don't think that it landed anywhere as shitty as the prequels of George Lucas's career.
I'm sure it didn't.
Oh,
but just because the original guy says, go ahead.
Yeah, all right.
I'm
going to
show you a movie. It's called Evil Cabin. We'll watch it.
Okay.
And it'll maybe be like Evil Dead, but you just give me your unbiased opinion of it as it stands.
Okay.
Evil Dead 2 is basically a remake of the first one as well. I know it went through the story a little bit more, but it was basically the same movie with a little bit more money.
Yeah.
At least that's how it felt to me. I don't know. I watched the first two back-to-back, and I was like, wow, these are really fucking similar.
When I was on deployment, I showed... I showed a friend of mine. I was showing him Army of Darkness.
Fuck yeah.
And our senior chief walked in, who is this old, crusty fucking sailor. This guy has been in the Navy for 25 years. He's getting ready to retire. And he comes down and he says, what's going on, boys? Oh, nothing much, blah, blah, blah. We're just watching this movie. All right. About 5 minutes goes by in Army of Darkness. He goes, what the fuck is this? I couldn't even explain it to him. It was just like, it was weird. Like, it was one of those moments where I just imagine that's what it's like to get caught masturbating. Like, if you're watching and laughing at, like, Army of Darkness, and, like, somebody just walks in, is clearly not going to get it. You're just like, I don't even have an explanation for what's going on right
just
now.
Just let me finish.
This is just, yeah, this is just, you're going to have to let me win it, finish this.
That's one where it starts off with Ash in the supermarket, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie fucking kicks ass. And they're doing an Army of Darkness show. It's like Evil Dead versus the Army of Darkness or some such shit.
Ash versus the Army of Darkness. Yeah, yeah.
So I thought he got out at the end of the movie, and he's back in S-Mart.
I'm sure they'll fucking tie it in somehow.
I'm sure.
Tie it in like 20 years later, have him as old Ash. Mm-hmm.
That'd be fucking sick.
Yeah. That would be cool.
And he's kind of like, you know, it's been a good run, and he's like, what the hell is that? And it's like a portal in his wall. It's like, no!
Again.
And some skeleton's like, come here, you fucker!
Yeah. Oh, and I love that, because all the Evil Dead things are always really fucking nasty and like very profane with their, like, you know, how they say things.
Yeah.
Like how you're just like, get over here, motherfucker. Like, they'll say that shit instead of like, I will eat your soul. They're like, fuck
or
you,
or speak
bitch.
Latin or something along those lines, Aramaic. No, they just fucking speak English and cuss you out.
That was a good genre five, man. Go ahead, Willis.
All right, hang on. I am writing mine down.
All right, I'll hit mine.
Go ahead.
Exorcist, Devil's Advocate, Ninth Gate. We already talked about those. The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
You like that?
I fucking love that movie because it's
your
like
name?
A
Charisma
law.
Carpenter?
Huh?
Charisma Carpenter?
Is that the...
From Dexter?
Dexter, yeah, his sister. Or his ex-wife. But yeah, it's cool, like, law procedural mixed with an awesome exorcism film, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I liked how they split it up. It was a different take on it, but they also had a lot of iconic things that they showed, like, the back... Like, her all...
I like the
Her
end.
Contortion in the movie is so fucking cool. Like, and that's her, like, doing all those weird poses. It's fucked up. And Shudder was the other one. It's a movie with the Dawson boy. Not Dawson himself, but
Joey?
Pacey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Joey, the girl.
The Dawson boy. Oh, Joey. No, it was the... I'll look it up real quick. But it was Pacey from there, which is weird that I remembered that.
Joshua Jackson.
Yeah, Joshua Jackson and Rachel Taylor.
I can't believe I remembered that.
It's like... it's basically like they take pictures and they see this dead girl kind of like following him around and stuff like that. It's a PG-13 flick, but it was still actually really good.
I've heard
it's
of
a Japanese,
it. I don't think I've...
It might be a remake. I'm not sure. Kind of like a...
Ring.
Ring or Ringu. The
that's
Grudge.
That's on my list. The Ring? The Ring. Definitely. No, dude, The that, Ring.
What?
The American.
Yeah.
The Ring. Ring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not like Ringu.
With
Naomi Watts.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic actress.
That's on your list, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck you. All right. I think that was
that's
my
five.
Whole, yeah, that was my five. So go ahead.
All right. So I've got Excuse the Ninth me. Gate.
Yep.
And is on there. So get that out of the way. Now, I think the Ninth Gate was really the only one with, like, the devil specifically. Like hell sort of shit like that, like that supernatural thing. But like The Shining,
yeah,
for supernatural.
That almost made my list just because it had like supernatural, like ether elements,
kind of like possession-y.
Yeah, so that was the supernatural. I mean, The Shining is just amazing. One, Jack Nicholson is
fuck
incredible.
Yeah. Did you see that made a TV thing from the dude from Wings?
Yes, and
I heard it followed closer to the
it's
book.
It's more true to Stephen King's novel, and Stephen King likes it better.
Right.
But fuck Stephen King.
Yeah,
and
Kubrick killed the fucking first one.
And here, listen, Steve, if you're listening.
Which I'm sure he is.
I mean that in all playfulness. But
I'm just gonna go burn a
we love your content.
But. Yeah, but Stanley Kubrick's a better storyteller than you are.
Oh, Stanley Kubrick.
Sorry,
the
I mean,
man.
That's kind of like saying Muhammad Ali's a better fighter than you are. Like it's just like I'm sorry, but he's the best at that thing.
Duh.
You know. So, The Shining was incredible. Scatman Carthers is great. Shelley.
Fuck yeah.
Shelley Duvall is incredible. Yeah. She looks like a fucking field mouse. And a horse had a baby, and it's awful.
Yeah,
she is one
she
of the
is
most
a mousy monster.
Long face, a lot of teeth. There's a lot of teeth in her mouth. Like I think more than most
what a
people.
Sadness in her.
She is one of the most unpleasant looking women I've ever seen, and she just works that role.
She's perfect.
I think he gave her. I heard he gave her tons of shit on set.
Oh
because
yeah,
she just would not get in line. Like
he's
like, I have a vision. You're not gonna fuck it.
He literally, like, he mentally tortured everybody who ever worked for him. Stanley Kubrick is just a fucking
that's
crazy
gnarly.
Person. He's a crazy person. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh wow, right on.
Ooh, there is
Sidewinder.
Yeah, Absolutely. I thought that would be one that was like, I didn't think either one of you were going to put that on there because you didn't think about it. But I really like this movie. Honestly, this was the first Indiana Jones film I ever saw because it was on VHS and it was just in my basement.
Yeah.
And I popped it in and I saw it and I forgot about it for a couple of years. And then when I was in the sixth grade social studies class, Mr. Ramos was probably hungover one day and was like, well, we're learning about ancient Egypt. This movie's got Egyptology in it, and throws in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it is my favorite film to this day.
Here you go.
It's just that you keep coming back to certain things. And Indiana Jones is one of those things that is very much imprinted on my heart. And I love it. The Ring.
Yep.
Just fucked. The Ring is just so fucked up.
This scary that, when like, you first, like, honestly, it creeped you out. Like, great, now I watched it.
It didn't scare
me. Yeah, that's how I kind of felt.
It didn't scare me so much because ever since I was a kid, I've always been into movies. So it was always more of how did they do that?
Gotcha.
As opposed to that.
Yeah.
But that was one of the, that was probably one of the first five movies that I watched. And when it went off, I just went, fuck. Yeah. Just like, after that, like, the first, because you got to understand, you know, a lot of people listening to this right now, a lot of the people who are around right now who like movies have, are natives of the digital age.
Yeah.
We occupy a very unique space in time that has not been occupied since we went from silent films to talkies.
Yeah.
We literally revolutionized how things work because, like, with Indiana Jones and stuff, all that shit was done by hand. It was model, it was miniatures and all this other
yeah.
stuff. Digital stuff started happening. You know, you had some special effects in like Highlander and shit like that, but like Toy Story and Jurassic Park
yeah.
came out
yeah.
in very quick succession.
And everyone's like, what?
Yeah. And so when that chick climbed out of the TV in The Ring,
okay.
I was
going to ask what part really
right.
solidified
went,
it for
what
you.
What the fuck? Like, it was just, because, you know, I hadn't seen any trailers for this shit. It was just
okay.
It was just sitting there at the store. I heard it was creepy. You'll die in 7 days, blah, blah. We prank call each other
yeah.
with that shit all the time. So I just grabbed it. I bought it. I put it home one night, and I was alone, and
oh,
I just
fuck
went,
that.
I was just like, what the
fuck? That sounds awful.
She crawled out the fucking TV. How'd they do that? Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, the part that freaked me out was, like, the fucking finger going through the nail and the tape and then all the maggots.
Yeah.
Like, that video in itself was just fucking creepy as all shit. Her, like, combing her hair in the mirror, like, everything about that was just fucked up.
When that horse charged Naomi Watts and then, like, hit its back legs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Just flipped over and just blood in the water.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Ring 2
this
is
the worst.
Ring 2 is bad, though.
Yeah. The guy's makeup.
All the deers.
Oh, yeah.
Or the deer, rather.
The guy's makeup in the chair when she grabbed him and he, like, turned him around.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, I'm all fucked up. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, his face. That was sick.
Then tied for fifth are two M. Night Shyamalan movies, weirdly enough.
Not Devil.
No.
Okay.
The most...
most
but obvious
that
one was so bad.
So bad. It's The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, technically it's an alien movie, but I really feel like it's supernatural, suspenseful, thriller, Signs.
How about
Swing Away, America?
Okay,
cool.
Yeah. You know, but The Sixth Sense, people forget. When The OC was on TV, I never watched an episode because Misha Barton was on it, and she freaked me out so fucking bad under that bed in
The
Sixth Sense. Yeah.
Ugh, fuck
I
that
was
part.
Like,
I saw that in theaters, and I was just like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And also,
the hanging people in the school really got me, too. That, that's so, like, fucking shocking.
And
movie,
then the back of that guy's head or that little kid's head like, turned around and it's all fucked up.
And it's super quick cuts and stuff. It's not like they were, like, really, like, hammering the gore down your throat. But when it's there, it was just like, wow, this is very impactful.
It flashed in front of you and went, oh, fuck. It was, you know. But one of the things, man, is that it's weird because, you know, you think about The Empire Strikes Back, you know, and I Am Your Father. Mm-hmm. We weren't around when that first happened.
Ah, the twist.
The twist. That, The Sixth Sense is, honest to God, one of the top 10 greatest twists all time.
Oh, I was shocked as shit. And a lot of my friends were like, oh, I saw it coming.
No,
not really.
You just heard everyone talk about it, because that was the whole fucking thing. Like, that just became part of the ether. He's like, yeah, Bruce Willis is dead.
Bruce Willis has been dead the whole time. And it's like, what
like,
the
what?
Fuck?
And then you reanalyze every scene with
the
him.
Red,
like,
the red stuff, the red door handle, the red dress, all that little stuff that he put in there was really neat.
Yeah, and it was just, it was incredible. And Bruce Willis is a very, very underrated actor.
Yeah.
Because, like, here's the thing. Actors are tools, essentially. And not, like, all your tool. But, I mean, like, actors are actors are tools. You have to use them properly.
Yeah. Right.
And if Bruce Willis is utilized properly, he can be fucking excellent. And so I just love him in that. And honest to God, that twist, nobody saw that shit coming.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. I really enjoyed that movie. And for the time, it was great.
All right, let's hop into weekly recommendations and rejections. I got two. Animatrix, started watching that. I'm on the second renaissance. Have you seen Animatrix?
I have not,
but
I've heard great things.
Fucking sick, dude. Okay. It's on Netflix right now. Oh, my God.
I can't talk it up enough because it redeems Matrix 2 and 3.
Okay. All of them. Basically, it's the prequel. Okay. And they go through other things. But yeah, they split it into like sections. I think it's four or five.
It's different animation teams. Different people who did like
But telling
Aeon.
The whole entire story. It's
but not
fucking
none
cool.
None that connect, but different people in the world that are surrounded by the Matrix.
Oh, so it's like when Batman had that Gotham Knight thing where
exactly.
it was all those different...
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
That thing was awesome too. Yeah, I have it on DVD.
Fantastic, because the different animators, there was animation teams who worked on Akira, animation teams who worked on Aeon Flux, and they come together for their own project, but then as a whole, you get to see these great fucking different styles of animation.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
and
cool.
My other one was Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And
fuck
if you want,
yes.
yeah. if you want your brain shattered, like I was getting a little, I was indulging myself and
good.
Not masturbating, but I was watching that show and literally, like, I started to feel sick of how gigantic and how tiny
was he
I was.
Explaining
yeah.
the cosmic calendar.
Yeah,
to you?
Yeah. I was like, ow, like I was getting a nosebleed. It was rough.
I can't get enough of that shit. I love
Neil deGrasse Tyson is amazing. Also, Star Talk Radio is fantastic.
Yeah.
Check that out too if you don't.
Have
listen.
Either of you seen the original Cosmos?
Hell no,
yeah.
But he talks about
Carl Sagan.
Yeah, he talks about
billions
Carl Sagan a lot.
And billions as we go out into the cosmos.
The only thing that I didn't really dig was all the like him interacting with every like it just looked kind of. Cheesy.
That's
well,
you
that's
have to watch
idea.
The original
you
Cosmos.
Have to see the idea.
All right, so it's like a nod to it.
Yes,
right on.
Everything he does is a nod to Carl.
That's
Carl
him
and Carl. Boys. Carl introduced him to the planetarium.
Because Carl Sagan, I mean, Carl Sagan taught Bill Nye, didn't he?
I think no, because I think Bill Nye had influence only because I think he was a New York kid.
Yeah,
I mean, and he worked
cause I
and
feel
saw
like,
something Carl
yeah,
did.
I feel like he went. He took a class from Carl Sagan at some
That's
point,
awesome.
Because I feel like Bill Nye was talking about Carl Sagan.
Because he eventually got his degree. Because Bill Nye actually only has an engineering.
Yeah, because he was
degree.
Working on planes. Yeah. But I feel like he took a class from Carl Sagan at
That's
some point.
Incredible.
But I mean, Carl Sagan is one of the most brilliant people who ever lived. His books are very easy to read and very cool.
Really?
Yeah. And
yes. He made the Cosmos for a layman.
I'd feel like I'd be tripping over words.
No. As easy as you watched Cosmos?
Yeah.
With
that was
grass.
Still, I mean, honestly, like, that, like, just hearing it, I was like, this doesn't
make
sense.
But that should
make
you want
to
study that.
So,
I agree, yeah.
So you go on with
it's
that.
Challenging.
Again, and that, and A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking is a great thing.
That's almost poetry.
Yeah. And so but it's so simple to read.
I gotcha.
So it's like, it's that easy, but honest to God, it's super simple to read. He's a very brilliant man. One of the most boring speakers you will ever meet in your life. His voice just will put you to sleep.
Yes, he is a very, like, he does a Pale Blue Dot is one of his little speeches. Gorgeous.
I think I've seen that. Yeah,
I've shown it to you.
Yeah.
He also said, if you want to make a pie by, if you want to make a pie,
Rise?
No, if you want to make a pie by hand, you have to first create the entire universe.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the idea that where you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
And it's all part of the cosmos. Mm-hmm. Like anything you do in this life, the universe had to be here for that.
Yeah.
So be happy and thankful and cherish it.
He's incredible.
That's neat.
Him and Johnny Carson were actually really good friends.
That's awesome.
And Johnny Carson did an impression of the billions and billions.
Fucked
with him all the time.
You'll get it. I think you'll be entranced by him because he's got such a unique. He's a very odd, unique man.
Do they have that on Netflix too?
It used to be.
Okay.
I watched it years ago on Netflix.
Oh God, what the fuck? Oh God, who am I thinking of? Who's the great Alan?
Turing?
No.
Moore.
Hang on, no, it's not Alan Moore. I'm gonna find his one of his things because he is one of the greatest philosophers I've ever fucking seen. And he talks about the universe and all sorts of shit like that.
One thing I forgot to do for genre five was give my, the close ones.
Mm-hmm.
Fallen.
Yeah. That almost made mine.
Yeah, Fallen was good. Bless the Child. And Hellraiser.
Cool.
Hellraiser would have been on there, but I've used that before, I think, on a couple. I fucking love that movie
Hellraiser,
so much.
It happens.
It's so good. Stigmata was on there too, but I didn't really dig that one.
Did
as
you
much.
Hear that? I bet you heard. I'm preaching to the choir here when I say you heard that they're gonna call it Mallrats.
Yeah, Mallrats, the new Mallrats sequel. Nice. Which I'm cool with. It's whatever. I think it'll be fun. He finished the script already.
Is Batfleck gonna be in that one?
Yeah, it's the only one that he hasn't gotten the two from.
Oh,
yeah,
come on.
I hope so, man. That'd be cool because he has everyone else. Back in it. And I don't know. I'm pumped for it. It'll be good. Clerks 3 and fucking Yoga Hosers and Moose Jaws. I mean, we have a lot of Kevin Smith coming up.
If Clerks 3 means more Rosario Dawson, I'm on board.
Yeah, it definitely will. She is part of Clerks 3 because she marries Dante at the end of the second one.
I'm in.
He's in.
Yeah. That's she's good. Great in Daredevil too. Go ahead.
I saw a picture of a Japanese Avengers 2 promo poster.
Uh-oh.
Did you hear about this bullshit?
Yeah. Gave away the entire
storyline?
A secret to one of the characters in the film. Like something that was a cool part to a certain character. Can I say the character? I mean, it's not giving it away if I don't say Hawkeye.
Oh,
do they just have his...
They just have something that shows that whole arc
in
the fucking promo poster on a theater in Japan.
That's a bummer.
Oh, it cracks me up, too, because it's one of the hand-drawn ones that are really nice. And I'm like,
Drew stuff. Yeah, I can't remember his name. About. But yeah, he did all the Indiana Jones. He did all Star Wars and stuff.
What a fucking tit.
Yeah. And you look at it and you just go, you dumb fuck.
Drew Struzan.
Yes.
Yeah. He has a really cool documentary.
His poster for The Thing is one of my favorite film posters of all
time. The Thing is so good in general. Fuck, that movie rules.
Oh, it's so tight. Just that hand coming at you with the shattered glass.
It's so sick.
Okay, but totally gave away the fucking, that arc
in that film.
Did you
hear about the translations too? They went through Google Translator.
Oh, boy.
And like a whole bunch of shit got fucked up. Like Captain America was like, if someone kills you, get up or whatever. There was that line in the movie.
Yeah.
And they changed it to, if someone kills you, run away. That was the translation, and people were fucking up in arms. People left the theaters and shit. It's crazy. But yeah, they Google translated it. They didn't actually like take the time to make it into their language so that they would understand everything. Because you know how some sayings don't correspond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, you should try on a film like this. We're not talking about an indie flick that came from
Cannes. Also passed the $1 billion mark already.
See, there it is. In 1 week.
Yep.
Yeah, week or so.
Worldwide. So it's 2 week release, I think, because they released in Australia first or whatever.
A week since we said it's going to pass.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. I said next week it'll
look. Yeah, 7 days later.
We are like, we're kind of like prophets.
A little bit, I would say, yeah.
or we're just smart. the last bit of news I have for the week was the buzz on the set, apparently from like PAs and different people, grips and stuff on the set, is that Jared Leto is kicking ass.
Are you talking about Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
Okay.
On Suicide Squad.
I wonder how much Joker is going to be in it.
I have no idea.
A lot.
I feel like he will too, just because they've been amping it up, but like he's not a part of the original Suicide Squad.
No, but I guarantee you they're going to change that for this movie.
Yeah, well, I think they had to because people were like, who the fuck is this? Like, that picture came up with the whole team, and everyone's like, I don't know who any of these people are.
Here's the thing, you know when else that happened? Guardians of the Galaxy.
Very true, and that fucking little raccoon killed.
Yeah, so.
And Groot.
Yeah. So, I mean, nobody knew who the fuck Guardians of the Galaxy were. Yeah. I mean, I knew who they were about a year before it came out, because they're like, my buddy was like, oh, they're making a movie about Guardians of the Galaxy. I said, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
They were like,
who are these?
Went to my
superheroes.
Marvel encyclopedia. I was like, what the fuck?
And he goes, okay, it's these guys and blah, blah. He tells me all about it. And he says, oh, and Tony Stark's out there. I said, oh, okay, that's my anchor to what I know. I was like, okay, I know about the Iron Man arc. Tell me about that. So, yeah, that's what I knew. But Alan Watts is the guy I was trying to think of.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Incredible.
Yes. Shit, I could have. Yeah. Alan
Watts. you need to look those guys up. It's really fucking great stuff. But my stuff, I suppose, B.B. King, The Life of Riley.
Mm-hmm.
It's a documentary about his life. And it's not only is it narrated by Morgan Freeman.
Oh, shit.
But,
and no penguins.
Yeah. And it's got... interviews with literally everyone you could want. Buddy Guy, Ronnie Wood, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, John Mayer, Derek Trucks, Susan Tejesi. It's just literally Mick Taylor. I mean, like, all the members of the Rolling Stones except for Charlie Watts are in it.
Yeah.
Everybody who's played a string instrument in the Rolling Stones is there. I mean, like, it's insane. The guy who opens it up, who starts talking immediately, Bill fucking Cosby. I mean, like, right about the beginning. So this is like, this movie came out, I think, in like 2013, maybe 2014.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow, that's pretty recent.
And it is fucking amazing. And they just go from his life early as a sharecropper in Mississippi, as a sharecropper son in Mississippi, all the way up to the fact where he met the Pope. He's met five presidents. He's done all this other shit like that. And, you know, they did the red, white, and blues thing at the White House in 2012.
Yeah.
And Obama, you know, goes up to the mic and he's like, you know, some days you just want to take a drive. You just want to get out and just clear your head a bit. And it's a little frustrating because the Secret Service won't let you do it. But there's other days where B.B. King and Mick Jagger come over to your house and have a concert. His job's not bad. That's fucking great.
Your house.
And I'm like, that's a true statement. Like, nothing about that was an exaggeration.
No, he did. Yeah,
like,
no,
that's so
hubris
cool.
On that. It was real.
So cool.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I watched Manaway, Jorge's movie.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking cool as shit, dude. And I wanted to ask you if you'd be cool with it. Me and Bob watched it last night. And we were thinking about maybe getting Jorge in here and maybe doing an in-depth on it.
Okay.
That you cool with that?
I would like to view it.
Duh. Yes. Yeah, I would get you the copy. Bob has it. He sent us a CD of the Slow Mutants. He sent us the Manaway DVD, and he sent us another documentary he did. So I have to watch the documentary.
The Slow Mutants produced my comedy, comedy DVD.
Awesome. So,
good dudes, man. Yeah, well, very Jorge, good. I don't know. Is there other people affiliated with Slow
Mutants?
Yeah.
Dylan, I think there's a couple. All these other guys. Yeah, there's a couple of people involved, and they're all great people.
Yeah.
Dylan Lusk, I think, did the lion's share.
We had him on one of the episodes of the main show. He's a cool guy, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, but Manaway, super awesome. Yeah. You can find it. Definitely check it out. Fucking, it was obviously shot in mostly Manaway, but yeah. It's cool. All right, do you have any other weekly recommendations?
Yeah, I got two more. The other one had to do, the one that was tied into B.B. King, which I hadn't seen in years, but I wanted to recommend, but Hearts and Souls, the 90s movie with Robert Downey Jr. and Kira Sedgwick and a couple other people.
Okay.
Robert Downey Jr. he starts off as a little kid, and he like sees all these ghosts in his room and all this other stuff, and he was friends with them, he talked to them. He grows up to be this dickhead, like, lawyer or whatever. Because Robert Downey Jr. plays a good dickhead, you know, whatever.
And it works.
He forgets where he comes from and all this other shit, and so in order, there's a cute little, like, premise to the movie is that if your soul is unfulfilled when you die, if you didn't get to do the one thing that you really wanted to do, you roam the earth.
That's
until
awesome.
You somehow get to do what you were supposed to do or what you wanted to do, and then you get on the bus to get to heaven.
That's
it's a bus
sick.
That nobody can see, so you get on the bus and you go up to heaven. And at the end of the movie, they're at this like big concert hall, and they've been like possessing Robert Downey Jr. like briefly in the movie, and so like the one guy whose dream was to sing in a crowded theater. You know, just to sing one time. And he had a beautiful voice, but he never did it because he was too shy.
Yeah.
And he goes out and he walks up and he just possesses Robert Downey Jr. He's up in front of the mic and he starts to sing the Star Spangled Banner. He starts to sing the national anthem. And he like forgets the words and they're like, by the dawn's. and he sings beautifully and it's Robert Downey Jr. singing.
That's sick.
And he's starting to kind of like waver, and everybody's going, who the fuck is this guy? And then you hear this guitar come on, and it's B.B. King.
What?
B.B. King starts playing the national anthem with Robert Downey Jr., who's being possessed by a ghost in a 90s film. And it's like, this is the most bizarre shit I've ever seen.
What was it called?
It was called Hearts and Souls.
Hearts and Souls? Was it a TV movie?
No.
I can't find it on IMDb.
Yeah, here it is. Heart and Souls.
Heart and Souls. Okay, 93. I got you. Yeah.
And it is. Who else is in this? It's Michael Madsen, I think, is in this too. No. It's not Michael Madsen.
Charles
it's,
Grodin.
It's
Alfred Woodard.
Tom Sizemore. I always get those two confused.
Okay.
Tom Sizemore is great. He was especially great before cocaine. Robert Downey Jr. is great.
I mean, also in Heat. The tragic thing about Heat, Black Hawk Down, Saving Private Ryan. Those are movies that he excelled in, but he was fried out of his mind.
Yeah.
And it makes him. Unfortunately, he's got the Philip Seymour Hoffman curse. Yeah. It makes him fucking better. Yeah.
What do you think? Seymour Hoffman was really fucked up a lot of the times that he was filming.
Yeah. I think, it gave him inspiration.
Really?
To fuck
I don't know if he was Stone Temple Pilots, Scott.
Scott Weiland, yeah.
Yeah, when he, like, his heroin writing was fucking amazing. But, like, when he got clean, it, like, Sour Girl came out and shit.
Yeah. But I feel like you don't need drugs to make you better.
True.
I feel like sometimes we feel that way.
The drugs can make you think you're better.
Right.
When you, you know, when you're sober, you're like, I was better when I was messed up.
You can think about
that. I need to get drunk before I can play this show.
But once you have the courage to get over that, I think, because
it's and it's happening to that part of your mind that already exists. Yeah. It's just that you take the easy way of doing it.
If you read my first book and my second book, it's funny because the first book was on drugs and the second book was a lot about drugs. So it was just, you know, two things. And I don't think by any measure that I was better, you know, on drugs or I was better at anything on drugs. I mean, yeah, I was. I mean, if you're, you know, tooting cocaine at fucking 4 a.m, you're gonna be able to stay up longer and learn your lines and figure out more shit about your character. But hey, carve out some fucking hours in your day when you're sober.
Eat some breakfast, get to it.
Be a human.
Yeah. Get some paleo, you know, eat some eggs, do some shit, and fucking, you know,
we're
get out
all
there.
Adults.
Right. Do this shit. You don't have to fucking slam an 8-ball.
But you would say that to someone who was on cocaine 2 days ago, and they're like, yeah, I could probably just do cocaine though.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna do that.
Yeah.
That could happen.
And they tell you you're a fucking like square. Leave me alone.
But here's the thing.
I get
but
over
that's
it.
The thing is that I've done enough cocaine to put Sean White through like at least a couple of fucking ski trips. There's just
wow.
There's I did. It's fine. It's okay. Like my nose is still fucked up, but it's okay. Like that's the thing. I swear to God, when I was watching CNN, they were talking about the Koch brothers running a fucking, you know, monopoly on super PACs. And I was just like, the Koch brothers, those aren't the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers are some guys named Menendez that I used to run with. it was a completely different thing, you know, like.
Different Koch brothers, assuming.
Yeah.
Oh, the cola.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's, Craig Ferguson said, you know, cocaine was just a vitamin that made me drink more.
That's awesome.
But. You know, so I don't buy the fucking drug thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, Robert Downey Jr., way better off drugs.
Definitely.
I agree.
Have you stopped waking up people's couches?
Yeah, absolutely. However, I'm just thinking, it probably wouldn't have been as big of an issue if he went on drugs after 08. Because, you know, Robert Downey Jr. wakes up in some kid's bed in L.A. And they're like, what the fuck is that? Oh, my God. And they called the cops. Robert Downey Jr. wakes up in a kid's bed in 2011, and it's Iron Man!
Yeah.
Do you want Pop-Tarts?
Yeah.
Mom! Dad!
Yeah, exactly.
Iron Man flew in.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has a movie where he's like hanging out with a kid half the movie anyways, so.
Iron Man 3, that was great, yeah.
So, what the fuck? You know, it would have been fine, but timing, whatever. But anyway.
That is very true.
Yeah, so Heart and Souls, that was one, because B.B. King and Robert Downey Jr., who we love here.
Definitely. Watch that dude read the phone book.
Yeah, and the last one is something that I watched this week. Kate and I sat down. She'd never seen it before. The Departed.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
such a fucking good movie.
You hit my note.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Departed is like, honestly, I have to reconsider. The Departed is probably in my top 10. It is so fucking good. That movie, I look at that film and I have to include it in something like The Godfather or Casablanca, where there is literally not a flaw to be found in the whole film. I mean, from the soundtrack, because Scorsese now is at the height of his powers. He's like, oh yeah, I did Goodfellas and Casino and Mean Streets and all the other shit. Like, I've done that. Let me just take all this, because he's not like an actor or an athlete where it's like you've had your prime physically. Now he's older and he's not dusty yet, but he's got all the lessons of those classics. He doesn't give a fuck about winning an Oscar anymore. He's just like, I'm just gonna make this movie. And he does it. And not only does he have an incredible young cast, but then he puts Martin Sheen and Jack Nicholson in these like elder statement roles. And you're just like, what the fuck? This is amazing. And it's Nicholson's last great performance.
Yeah, seeing Nicholson like that, I was like, oh my gosh.
That was...
It literally made him young and powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie was the rocket ship to Valhalla for Jack Nicholson. That
I was horrified when they were having that conversation. He was drawing the picture of City Hall and the rats.
Yeah.
And he smacks the bug and eats it.
Mm-hmm.
But then... Leonardo tells him, like, if you come for me, I will put a bullet in your fucking head.
Just
he
like
drops his gun under the fucking table, and he goes, let me grab that. Oh, sorry.
And he picks it up, and he kind of puts it in.
Yeah.
You want to be me?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, fuck.
And then something about when he comes back, and he's like, forgot my smoke, French.
Yeah.
And, like, grabs his smoke and, like, hits it right next to French's face, and then walks away. I was just like, this is...
intimidating.
The most intimidating
shit.
Fucking yeah. scene.
Because Nicholson has a fucking edge to him, man. There's just, doesn't matter how old he gets, if Jack makes a certain face and he starts talking in that fucking yeah. voice and he starts getting in your ear about things, you know? And it's all gravelly and smooth at the same time. And yeah. you're like, how the fuck? You yeah. are the scariest man I've ever seen.
Even when he's in a leopard stripe robe.
Yeah.
That doesn't look a. appealing or evil or anything in that manner, but he looks over at his wife when she back talks him. He's like, yeah. "You watch your fucking mouth."
Yeah,
and she's like, "No, you watch it." And I'm yeah. like, "Holy shit!" He's
just... Yeah, because he pulls a man's hand out of a plastic bag, yeah,
playing with it.
Yeah, he's just like, "John Lennon said, I'm an artist. Give me a fucking tuber, and I'll get something out of it." And he's just playing with a human hand.
Pulls
the wedding ring off. And you know, French is like, I liked how you asked him which hand he jerked off with. It was really nice. That was really nice. I was like, what the fuck? He's like walking out of the bar in the back bar because he's trying to set up DiCaprio. It is just such a great Web of Lies movie. And
yes.
He comes out just covered in blood, like up to his fucking, the bottom, from his elbows down in his sleeves and just all the way up to his fucking crotch, just blood. And he looks back, he goes, get a mop. And a bucket. And like, just walks back.
I mean, honestly, his one-liners, they're iconic and simple and to the point, but the way he delivers them, he's even amazing. Like, shot in a beer.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy crap, everyone asks for shot in a beer. I've yeah. heard it 20 times. Yeah. Never he just said so it sick. So hard. Yeah. yeah.
And he was just, because another one is, you know, who let this IRA fuck in my bars? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. How's your mother? Oh, she's on her way out. We all are. Act accordingly.
Act accordingly.
What? He's amazing. Cool.
French, so, too.
I need to watch the
French is incredible.
Yeah.
French is Beowulf, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's just...
Oh, you mean the CGI Beowulf?
Yeah, him. He is Ray Winstone. He's an yes. incredible actor. Mark Wahlberg is a fucking... He's the unsung hero of that film. He's amazing.
Oh.
He's so shitty to Leonardo DiCaprio throughout the entire movie. He's such an asshole. Alec Baldwin is great yes. in it. Because Alec Baldwin should never...
There's lines from every... Yeah.
Alec Baldwin should never be in a movie for more than 20 minutes or 30 minutes. If you get Alec Baldwin to do like Glengarry Glen Ross or yeah. The Departed, where he just shows up and he's in the movie for a total of like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like once Alec Baldwin got like heavy, not yeah. like young, handsome, Hunt right. for Red October Alec Baldwin, he can be in shit all
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I'm a hero.
But like older Alec Baldwin, like if he's not doing comedy, like he should just be in like Christopher Walken cameo parts yeah. where it's just like, I'm going to come in here and break heads and just fucking leave. And Patriot Act. I love this shit. You know, great lines. You know, the guys don't put cameras in the back.
Yeah.
He's flipping out and you know, they're yelling at somebody. And Mark Wahlberg looks at the guy. He's like, what the fuck is going on? He's like, well, nobody told us we had like 2 hours prep. He's like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, and the guy goes, you know, who are you? And he goes, I'm the guy doing my job. You must be the other fucking guy.
And I was like, oh my God. That's sick.
Who the fuck? I forget. I think it's Mark Wahlberg says, who forged your transcript, dickhead?
Oh, yeah.
What he's yelling at, he's yeah. cocking back at yeah. him because...
That shit was so funny. It's like, apparently our department has more leaks than the Iraqi Navy. And I was like, Jesus.
Oh, like, he's like, my philosophy on feds is like same mushrooms. As shrooms.
Feed them shit and keep them in the dark. It's just amazing.
I got a fucking hat on. All right, sorry. We literally yeah. could do this full film.
It's so good. So that movie... I'm telling you, Leonardo DiCaprio, Anthony Anderson is in it briefly, Matt Damon, who's awesome in it, Vera Farmiga, who is yes. incredible. She's in The Judge. She's in Autumn in New York. Rats. She's in Mars. She's an incredible actress and a gorgeous woman. Jack Nicholson, Martin Sheen.
Sorry.
The entire cast is just brilliant. And the soundtrack is great. There are a lot of little nods to like the CD that busts Matt Damon is the case is Exile on Main Street, and they play Gimme Shelter throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they also play a couple of the Rolling Stones songs because Scorsese loves the Stones. But like that fucking movie, it's in my top 10, and it is one of the greatest crime dramas of all time.
Yes.
Period. It's so good. And it's perfect because it it's in an era where it looks good on film. Like that that sort of style of filming will never look dated.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no real special effects to make it look dated either. And yeah. So it was in the time where it could look so clean because it's in HD and it's on all that other stuff, but there's no special effects to date it. So it's literally the perfect time for a perfect movie.
Oh, it was perfect.
It's great.
I did make a mistake. Claire Forlani. I mix her up with Vera Farmiga a lot. Yeah, she's not
in that. And Vera Farmiga,
they're both wonderful. She was in Vera Farmiga, Meet Joe Black.
Yeah, Vera Farmiga is in. She's
in Bates Motel. She's Norman Bates,
yes.
Right?
She's Norman Bates' mom. She's in that. She's in The Judge, and she's in Autumn in New York playing Richard Gere's daughter.
Yeah,
and
Conjuring,
Scared Straight. I'm Running Scared with
Running
Paul
Scared.
Walker.
Yeah.
She, underrated film.
She's an orphan.
Yeah, she is. She is gorgeous, and she's
She's intoxicating.
Hers, Norma Bates, is fucking awesome. She's so fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that little kid from August Rush plays Norman.
Yeah,
oh, yeah
fucking
yeah.
blows my mind.
Up
kid
in the
has
air
a fucking
too with Clooney. She was in that.
Yeah, that Clooney's best performance.
Yeah,
down.
Up in the air is the shit.
I don't know. Tomorrowland looks pretty good.
They're going all kinds of steampunk.
I like how Disney's like, we got this ride. Can we make a movie out of it? Yeah, go ahead. And then fucking Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, they franchise that shit off a ride.
You guys, I took a shit. It looks unique. Come check it out. Yeah. We can make a film out of it.
Well, just anthropomorphic. I can't say that fucking
anthropomorphic.
Thank you. Yeah. Make the poop fuck.
Anthropomorphize.
Yeah. Thank you.
Poop.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Test of Tony, Hellboy, 2004.
Okay, not much on it, just because I feel like everyone knows this. I don't know.
Budget $66 million.
Guillermo del Toro, right? Direct.
Excellent,
bam, bam.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. He's the man. Even when he's off his almost, I don't know. I almost like someone gave him a big budget or gave him a unique story to work with,
mm-hmm.
and it almost seems for me away from the Guillermo that I love the most, which
Pan's
is
Labyrinth.
The Pan's Labyrinth, Devil's Backbone, Guillermo. Very to the heart Spanish stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pan's Labyrinth's fucking amazing.
Mixed in with his gorgeous Guillermo like aesthetic heart.
That man has an eye. Oh,
like
yes.
You read about, man.
Dude, yeah.
Every creature from that film, if you took it as a still, as a picture,
yeah.
is so gorgeous and unique. And now I know that they are based off of mm-hmm. comics.
Oh, right.
But his design of them.
A lot of octopuses in it.
Yeah.
I don't remember all the octopi, or I don't even know if that's the plural for it.
Should be.
Yeah, octopi, I think it is.
It's always I when it's Latin. If the word is Latin, is of Latin origin, then you do I.
Huh.
And if not,
I is the multiple.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's penis, not peni. Penis.
It was a $66 million budget. Worldwide made $99 million, probably why they went for Golden Army, which I think did a lot less business than that one did. Because I think they
waited too long.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Because it was 2004, this was made.
To what, 7?
Was it?
There's one creature in Golden Army that sticks with me. And the one that sticks with me in this film is... his name is Krause.
Oh, okay.
The double blade guy with the mask.
Yeah.
And he's got sand
yeah.
for blood.
That's cool. Abe was fucking weird.
I got you.
I want to say Frasier's brother.
Was it? Niles?
I want to say, yeah. The actor that plays him is Frasier's brother.
Is it? What's his name? David Hyde Pierce?
I'm
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones. I was going to say, if that was David Hyde Pierce, that would be fucking hysterical.
Abe Sapien is who you're talking about.
This
guy yet.
Who does play? He plays some unique role like that.
That's
so you wouldn't think him.
What's his name?
David Hyde Pierce.
He plays a role that you're like, oh shit, that was him.
HYDE.
Thank you.
And now I know Kelsey Grammer plays Beast.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was in A Bug's Life.
of course he was. No, Kate loves Frasier. She like loves.
Oh, he was the voice, uncredited voice of Abe Sapien.
Okay,
but
maybe that's where
that
I thought it.
That's crazy. Good call, man.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it was. I would say yeah. It does hold up. It's fresh. It's good.
I liked it. I just didn't like the storyline between Hellboy and Blue Fire Girl. I can't remember her name.
Selma Blair.
Yeah,
I don't.
I don't know. It was so run of the mill.
The chemistry is just not. It didn't pop.
I felt like they could have done a lot with the character, but it's still the movie flowed well. That's the only part that I had a real problem with.
Is it weird to say I don't require a love story not in a all. Film like
no,
that?
No, no, you don't have to do that. Like, dude, Pacific Rim pissed me off so much because he did the same shit. He's like, well, I gotta make a love story. There's gotta be a love interest. Like, is that
a part of his contract that said love story for this long?
Jesse Joyce is I worked with him at the Comedy Cellar at Mojo's one of the last times I was here. And he has a great joke about that he was talking about. He says, you know, there's always a girl part required in like action movies, and he hates that. There's always like, oh, well, here's this sassy chick on the SEAL team for some reason, and there's like a love story.
Yeah, she likes
in.
Knives.
Now is it because
yeah.
they have to speak to the female audience? Is that
well,
why they do that?
Pandering.
They're like, throw
the
bone,
reason.
I
right.
guess.
And no. so, and it was, the, and it was that. And he's also said like, The Gray is a great guy movie. You know, The yeah. Gray, and he says, you know, it's dudes punching wolves in the face. Yeah. Like that's what that movie's about. And like every time. You know, what did he say? He says, every time Liam Neeson's running through the woods, he hides behind a tree. Why did my marriage fall apart? he's like flashing back to his wife, like,
mind.
Maybe I should have been nicer to my mother-in-law, like this weird shit. And like, Jesse's fucking hilarious. And so he says, you know, he had to sit and watch Sex and the City 2, the movie. And he says, yeah. you can't just throw in like a fucking 5-minute car chase for me, guys.
That's
really?
Awesome.
You
That's
can't,
a really good yeah. point.
You know, so he was like, there's nothing for men in chick flicks, but there's got to be something for yeah. chicks in guy flicks, which is, you know, a little shitty. But I mean, of course, it's not like, oh, women have all the power in Hollywood. No.
But it also takes away from the storyline because you're using precious screen time and yeah. fucking film time to fucking give this bullshit storyline yeah. that you know how it's going to fucking turn yeah. out. They get together. Awesome. Great.
The
don't
great,
care.
Yeah. The Great Escape is a 3-hour movie and there's not a single woman in it.
There you
oh,
go.
Yeah. Another one. Matt. Until he, after he, oh, I would say Road Warrior, but not yeah. Mad Max, the original, but Road Warrior.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting because you can do that. You know, you can have a movie where there's literally no female characters mm-hmm. and it's just like, no, this isn't a, like, no, this isn't, oh, this is sexist because we don't have that. No, because you're at a POW camp in World War II. Where are the women?
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're in Germany in World War II in a POW camp. Where are the women? Shut up. So... I feel like, okay, here's this supernatural thing. If there was no love story, you can have female characters, whatever, but if there's no love yeah. story, it's not going to hurt.
No.
Also, Selma Blair is in the same category as Uma Thurman for me, where I can never tell if she's really ugly or really hot. I can't tell.
I think she's just kind of like vanilla. It's like, oh, you have a face, you have eyes, you have a mouth. I get it.
But, like, there's something about, maybe it's just because I saw Cruel Intentions at, like, a very mm. hormonal age. Mm. Like, I'm just like, there's something about Selma Blair, but I'm like, you might be
more,
ugly.
More a Sarah Michelle guy?
In that
of
lineup,
those two,
in
of
that
those
lineup,
two?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For the whole movie, I'd take Ryan Phillippe.
So would I.
But
two times.
But there's just something about her face that I'm just like, are you attractive? I don't know.
She's the girl that you'd walk by at the amusement park and not blink an eye. You just walk right by.
That's what I'm saying. Vanilla.
Not
bad, not good.
She's never taken risks.
But, like, Uma Thurman, nothing from Pulp Fiction. Nothing from even Cowgirls Get the Blues. But, like...
Kill Bill?
I saw Kill Bill, and I was like, eh.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's other parts...
She ages. She's good age.
But there's other parts of Kill Bill where I'm like, oh, absolutely not. But there's something like, nope. I'm like, just fucking pick a side.
Even
God
in, like,
damn it.
What Batman for or Batman and Robin.
That movie never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
But Poison Ivy, I mean, like, they tried to sex her up in that movie, and I felt like it fucking fell short.
I don't know
Everything
what you're talking about.
Oh, okay, right on.
Tragedy.
Right on.
I don't know what you're talking about. That never happened.
You know what I want to start talking
so,
about.
So, wait, but, yeah.
Oh,
boy.
I give it, I say yes, it's good.
I think it passed, too. Pass the test. Yeah, I liked it a lot more this viewing than I have in past viewings. Golden Army's fantastic.
It's a fun
movie. I want to talk about Heat. Michael Mann's Heat.
Yes!
Dude up.
1995.
Yes. Budget, $60 million, possible. It wasn't confirmed, and it made $187 worldwide. That's a lot of money.
It was the first film that put De Niro and Pacino in the same scene. Godfather 2 had them, but they had...
And you know what's funny about that? They weren't even in the same room.
Yeah, it was... Well, chronology prevented them from being in that room.
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of those things
in
that
Heat?
You watched. No, in Godfather 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so there was always that, man, these two are the juggernauts of that Italian fucking sort of pretty much like
the
70s gangster movie.
Italian
yeah.
gangster movie actors, yeah.
And then they came together in Heat. And that was a big thing, you know.
That scene in the diner, though, I don't think they were ever in the same room when that happened.
That's what I thought you were talking about. Yeah. So you think that they just filmed their lines and then... And had someone talking to them.
Because if you look at the background, no one ever crosses... The same character does not cross over from De Niro to Pacino's side.
Huh. I read somewhere that when... I don't know if he filmed them separate or together, but I do know that they did not rehearse together
at all. No,
that they would have an awkwardness in the dialogue. If it was filmed together or separate, there was still an awkwardness to how they would respond.
Now, they did other scenes together in that film, but when they were sitting down at that table, I don't think they were together in the same room.
That's really interesting.
So because they cut back, there's never a wide shot of them both sitting there.
The establishing of them in the diner.
So, like, you know, De Niro sits down, Pacino sits down, and then there's Pacino, De Niro. And then they show shots of, like, a wider shot of, like, his whole body and the background.
Yeah.
Or, like you would be in the window looking in, and you see De Niro, and you see all the guys in the back. Then you cut to Pacino, you see all the guys in the back. But no one ever, there's never a waitress who, like, walks past both of them.
Yeah. I got you.
So you're like, are they in the same, I don't think they're in the same room at the same time.
It's kind of like... worlds colliding anyways.
Yeah.
That dialogue they give to one another. He's like, I think the whole theme of the movie from De Niro's perspective, I will never be close to something that I can't get rid of within 30 seconds. Right. Walk away from in 30 seconds if I feel the heat around the corner. How cool. I mean, what a cold way to live, but like, he's the best at what he does, and
there's a reason.
Pacino's the best at what he does, and Al Pacino is fucking awesome in this movie.
That was the last movie, and it started to happen right then. That was the last movie before Al Pacino fully swallowed that carton of Marlboro Red 100s and became a cartoon character. It was just because there's there's a scene that she's got a great ass.
Yeah,
and you're like,
I didn't know where that came from, and I was like, oh shit, there it is,
and I was like, Al.
And he ad-libbed that line. That wasn't in the script.
Said, Jesus Christ. Sit down. Let's talk.
Calm down.
I said, Son of a Woman got you the Oscar. We get it. You can go back to being Al Pacino and not like, Al Pacino! And like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, man, because he was so good. He was so good. And he just...
Now, what was nice for me is that I saw Righteous Kill first, and then I saw Heat, and I was like, oh, this is what that was supposed to be. Because Righteous Kill fucking
I
want to
say, Michael Mann has one of the prettiest hard-ons for L.A. Mm-hmm. I've ever seen in film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
His vision of L.A. in Collateral and Heat, the night vision that he gives, like the vision of a night life in L.A., I don't know L.A., but if it feels the way I feel, like a cool breeze and like a neon genesis of a fucking like organism city, and everything in it is just fucking cool and gritty and raw. And
I feel like 95
moves fast, but you're still like a spirit amongst like other tombstones at night.
That's like a perfect representation of that time, though. I don't know, like when I was like growing up watching movies, I always saw those types of cities and stuff like that. Like it was that time frame.
I wrote that too. Like 90s LA is awesome. And so, for like, that kind of story,
it really spoke to me in the fact that I was like, oh, this reminds me of my childhood seeing movies like this. But I'm able to understand the storyline way more than fucking be like, I don't get why these people are so angry.
Also, he filmed it in 65 locations in LA.
Yep. No sound.
No fucking sound stage was used. Set locations.
That fucking gunfight. Can we just talk about how great Val Kilmer is in this movie?
He fucking kills.
Oh my god.
The whole movie in general, I was super fucking pumped on it. It 2 hours and 50 minutes. Didn't fall asleep once. Nope. Fucking watched it all the way in one sitting.
And it doesn't feel like a long movie.
No, and the storyline progresses enough, and there's so much awesome character development, and like they dive in, so many good parts. Like, it was just so rich.
Tom Sizemore, Val Kilmer, all like the supporting players are perfectly so crafted cast. And like Val Kilmer's ponytail should have had fucking billing in that movie.
Honestly,
it was fucking righteous as shit.
Yeah, when he rocked the flat top at the end.
When they're talking at the diner and the hillbilly kind of looks at him over his shoulder because they smacked the dude's head on the table. Ugh. And Tom Sizemore just leans over and looks at him like,
that
just
fucking,
get the fuck back to your paper.
Yeah.
Just the most evil, like, fuck you.
And the dude just looks back down. Yeah. Oh, that part was fucking
puts his
sick.
Head back in his paper because he's like, I will come the fuck over. Yeah.
There are a few
Henry
people,
Rollins, by the way. I wanted to make note of this.
Yeah.
I was like, that dude looks really familiar, but I feel like he doesn't have black hair. And then I was like, that's fucking Black Flag.
Yeah.
Henry Rollins.
Oh, yeah, Henry Rollins, dude. That he, oh my God, so good. Because like we were talking about Nicholson, Tom Sizemore has that ability to intimidate.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's just a film thing or if he might be that imposing in real life. Because I just feel like it, when you watch somebody who's 50 feet tall on a big screen, it's like, okay, that's intimidating. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I'm like 6'4" and 220 pounds. I'm like, so I'm like,
meh. Hey, he's probably 5'10".
Right. So I'm like, this probably wouldn't work in real life. But if it did, like, oh my God.
I don't know. I haven't watched many interviews with Tom Sizemore, but I do think he is a gritty dude.
Just an intense motherfucker, yeah. Well, he's on cocaine. I'm sure he was very intense.
Yeah, I bet he is.
I was intense on cocaine.
A gritty dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just, that's a lot of, it's just some great shit. And Val Kilmer, man, Val Kilmer just had a good decade in the 90s.
Yes.
He just had a great decade.
Being Val Kilmer in the 90s would have been fan-fucking-tastic.
Tombstone. And early 2000s. I mean, Kiss
Dude,
Kiss
him
bang
as
bang.
Doc Holliday. You've seen Tombstone now.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll be your Huckleberry.
Mm-hmm. Why, Johnny Tyler? You look like somebody done walked across your grave. I was like, oh my God. See, here's the thing. I saw that movie when I was in like the eighth grade.
That's such a good time to see movies.
And so like, I saw that movie because it was one of my teachers. I think it was like Mr. Peterson or something. And I was at the Academy of Technology at that time. And so it was just two teachers, Mr. Kyoshin and Mr. Peterson. And I was talking about how much I loved Boondock Saints and how cool it was and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, you think Boondock Saints is cool? You need to check out Tombstone. And I was like, well, for what? I was like, for what? And he was like, I was like, and I like looked it up on the computer and I was like, Kurt Russell plays a cowboy. Lame. And he was just like, Kurt Russell's not why you watch this movie.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm coming in, hell's coming with me. Nah, fuck. Just cut him out of the movie. Val Kilmer is the reason why you watch this film. Thomas Hayden Church, a very young Thomas Hayden Church, is excellent in it. But he, oh my God, Val Kilmer is so, he's such a great actor. He's such a great actor, and he just does it up. And like his death scene at the end where he's like, I got to die with my boots on. He looks down and he's in his socks and he's just like, well, I'll be damned. And he just dies. And I'm just like, oh my God, so good. It's so good.
I don't know. That death scene is sad because he's like, if you have ever had 1 ounce of love for me, you will go now.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here. Yeah. You do not want it. I don't want you to see this.
Yeah.
Let me die alone.
Yeah.
That was a good impression.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. No, when he says,
you didn't know.
I'll be your Huckleberry.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh God, what's that even mean?
Yeah, I'm your
That's so badass.
You're no Daisy at all. Shot that motherfucker in the head. Oh my God. So good.
I'm gonna go back to Heat real quick.
Yeah.
The part where Robert De Niro comes up the stairs and he finds Val Kilmer's wife, she's letting that dude leave the hotel. And you see the cleaning maid, like the cart pull up and like the knock on the door. I was like, if this is Robert New, this is going to be so sick. And he just fucking kicks open the door.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, that's so such good. A cool fucking touch.
Oh,
like, that's so badass to be like, well, she's not going to open it up if it's just anybody. She's going to look at the people. So I'll just slide this thing right here.
Yeah.
That was so fucking cool.
Perfect.
I like that.
Drive-in
sequence, too, at the drive-in theaters. That part was so fucking brutal.
That was
that Val Kilmer shoots a dude and it turns him around. Robert De Niro shoots him through the car window, turns it back around, and he hits him with the fucking car. I was like, "You kidding me?"
Yeah.
So good.
That was a variation of an MP4 that he was using to snipe, which is really unique for a sniping application because it's a short range 9mm.
It's Michael Mann in the 90s, and Val Kilmer had a ponytail, and it was just like, fuck it, he can use a machine gun.
Here's a big gun.
Yeah, get that sweet ass thing.
This looks cool on a rooftop. I bet it was just aesthetic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I did want to just note just the, like we were talking, the engineering of the cast was the casting director for that film needs a kiss.
Oh my God.
He or she did fucking phenomenal, and they melded perfectly. Now I wanted to bring up
all the guns.
I wanted to bring up the trigger discipline that's shown in the film, as well as not accurate amount of bullets per magazine. And
but it was
of that
the
nature.
90s. That's when there was unlimited bullets.
Pierce Brosnan was James Bond. All the fights had
guns. 1,000 bullet magazines. But pretty good trigger discipline. People had their fingers off the trigger when they weren't supposed to be killing.
Yeah.
No one was pointing guns when they shouldn't. It showed the guns they use showed their nature as well, not wanting to spray fire.
Yeah.
So you don't use an FN foul if you don't want to spray fire. You use
Bonnie Timmerman was the casting.
Good. good.
Wanted to shout that out.
Glocks and Berettas were the pistols used mainly. Loved those. But then they used an FN Foul. Sizemore used that in the bank robbery.
Yeah.
And then a Galil 5.6x45 was used by Sizemore.
We are not stealing your money.
Yeah.
They are insured.
Don't risk your lives. Yeah. Just
stay quiet. We'll go home.
Then I think most of the police used like M16A1s and things of that nature.
God
smaller caliber bullets.
I'm about to say, like, the police are coming out with fucking machine guns. I was like, this is tits.
That was almost like a... I mean, that would be a tactical team that wasn't SWAT so much as it was them just arming themselves.
Yeah, no, they had
from
to.
The bat, from the, yeah, they're like, we don't have time to get SWAT. Like, yeah. Grab the assault rifles, let's go.
Well, that's the whole thing. I can't remember what movie it was from, but they mentioned it about, like, how, like, criminals started getting automatics and the police started having, like, you know, they get armored piercing rounds.
Well,
we have
that's
to get...
like the Tommy gun coming home from World War II.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Making
yeah.
the police not efficient with their revolvers,
right,
comparatively.
Right.
Have you seen Harlem Nights?
Yeah. I mean, I have, but... Right. Where it's kind of just raw gnarliness, right?
What, no, Harlem Nights, just where they, it's Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor. And
yeah,
all those guys, where,
fucked up amount of cussing in that right, film, right?
But, like, but when they're shooting at Eddie Murphy, and like Arsenio Hall's got the Tommy gun,
yeah.
And he's shooting the one guy's, pops, grrr, 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 bang, this pistol, and Arsenio's like, what are you doing with that little shit? Put that shit away. Don't shoot that shit no more.
I think there's a meme of that.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. Because it's just... It shows you the futility of a pistol in a situation.
Yes.
Everyone's got a machine gun. And obviously, you know, movies kind of made people think, oh, well, machine guns are meant to, like, kill people and, like, do all this other stuff. It's like, no. Machine guns are meant to make you duck behind something.
Right, so that you is can, a cover
spray.
Weapon.
So you can move forward, right. So you can advance troops. And it's like, if you want to bleed somebody out, that's when you get the pistol. Like, you know what I mean? Once you get a pistol, just shoot somebody and make them bleed to death. Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of those guys were using sub-machine guns. Mm-hmm. They don't have any accuracy when they have 10-inch, 12-inch barrels.
No.
But you spray that shit, you're going to get 6 rounds on a car. Yeah.
I felt like the shootout scene, though, that big one at the end, was really well done.
Oh, they were...
It felt like, you know, a couple people were getting hit, but not very
even,
many.
Even the sounds, the cracks off the walls of the street.
The sound design of that movie was fucking spot on, I'll give you that.
I think my favorite gun in that film was the FNC-80 that Pacino uses in the end.
Yeah,
that big motherfucker, that's the biggest fucking gun.
Pacino just said, fuck it, I'm going all out.
Yeah.
He was just like,
I mean, in the fire from that gun, literally the muzzle brake makes it come out in like a cross.
Oh my God.
Bad fucking gun.
Like,
was it Donald Breeden? Was that the, whose real name's, or was Sergeant, hold on, my bad. I just lost his name.
No, it's cool.
Donald Breeden. He was the guy that, like, worked at the... diner.
Oh, the
and
cook.
That's who they got the driver.
Yeah.
I was so bummed out about how his storyline ended.
That shows the futility and like what greed, greed corrupts and how greed gets innocents killed. Pretty much, they bribed him offer, promised him something great, and he.
I felt like
took
his storyline was like really well executed because they didn't have him much in the movie, but I felt a lot for that character once it was gone.
Because
like,
he was doing
dude.
Things right. Yeah, he was the most honest character in the film.
But you usually don't get that type of stuff when they like when movies try to put that sort of thing in there, they kind of cram it.
He was the most innocent person in that film, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's usually ham-fisted when people try and do it. But
exactly, it's shoehorned. They're like, we need this part.
Or you
feel bad.
Or you think one of the cops will be the Superman of the film. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Pacino was fried out on 3 marriages.
Yeah.
He was about to lose his other
Natalie Portman, too.
Yeah, Natalie Portman was...
Fantastic. I just saw this movie for the first time, so my mind was shattered. I mean, like, the ending of it, the fucking... Everything, I don't know, there's so many parts of this movie, I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It was really cool. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It was nice to experience it for the
this
first
is
time
what
with
I'm
no background.
This is something I've been, like, working on, is the in-depths being something that maybe I haven't seen for a few years, but I know I had... a profound love for and he may not have seen and this is where like I have a list at the end of my notes here that's kind of like I chiseled off heat last night. I like deleted it. Nice. I just wanted to make one more little note. Fucking phenomenal film, go see it. But
Jeremy Piven is the doctor, was that it?
Yeah, no, but he is. Yeah,
I love that.
Um,
give me your shirt, come on man, I gotta
it was actually an ex-British SAS commandos that did the technical advising for the film.
They had to, because the trigger discipline, the how they carry the guns, what they were doing, it. There are police in this world who are not as well trained as the cast of this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
you know,
the action is the juice.
Also, the cops are shooting into fucking full on traffic. People in their cars, the cops are just firing back at those. Yeah. Like, I was like, that seems kind of weird.
Well, that's where shootouts like the North Hollywood shootout, Waco. These things get out of hand in a split fucking second when you hear a machine gun go off from an assailant.
Yeah.
Your response as a police officer is, oh, fucking motherfucker.
Yeah, and they were shooting crowds of people. Like, they were running through that fucking park. Like, I was like, holy fuck.
The amount of innocent casualties and things like that are phenomenal. Yeah. And they don't get reported on as much as they probably should, because fucking secondary targets and collateral damage are such a horrible part of every kind of warfare and street level, war level, in Baghdad as well as in LA, if two guys come out with assault rifles from a bank.
Did you also catch that Danny Trejo's character was named Trejo?
Yeah.
That was his last,
I thought that was weird.
They're like, oh, it's a good name. Let's go for it. Yeah.
That's why Tony Danza is always called Tony and Jack Nicholson is usually.
It's so they don't
Jack.
Forget that they're being addressed. Yeah.
It's so weird.
I love when Tom Sizemore says, the action is the juice for me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care about the risk.
His character was cool as fuck.
The action's what I want.
Always cool. Always cool.
Yeah, and I just wrote Greed is a Killer. Great fucking film.
Yep.
Yeah, I loved it. I was super stoked on that. Thank
and
you for recommending
recommended
it.
Recommended with it, Collateral. Absolutely. Same director, Michael Mann. If you want another more personal sort of journey between two men and an assassin and a fucking innocent, kind of like traveling...
That was either the first movie after or the last movie before Tom Cruise's complete breakdown on television.
Yeah.
Oh, like, and, I love this woman?
Yeah.
The Oprah couch?
Yeah, when he jumped on Oprah's couch. And Tom Cruise is fucking incredible in it. He's so fucking good.
Yes. That's almost... That's the coldest Tom... Can you name another Tom Cruise as cold as Collateral? No.
I just watched part of Mission Impossible.
You're getting happy Ethan Hunt, or at least I'm going to get him Ethan Hunt, but you're not getting
cold,
merciless killer.
I haven't watched that since I was like...
killing club owners on like...
You killed that guy! No, the bullets in the fall killed him. I shot him.
I enjoyed Mission Impossible. I need to watch... I'm trying to get... I want to watch all of them.
What bugs me about Mission Impossible is the first film is almost... Besides maybe the last 20 minutes, is nothing like the second or third film in its styling. Mm-mm. Because the first one feels like Berlin 60s sort of really nice,
espionage.
Clean
film,
espionage.
I felt it was like a cheap James Bond. That's kind of like what I felt from it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But Mission Impossible was a TV series way back in the day. I mean, they got, you know, they got all the stuff. But they were great. And, you know.
The first one I really enjoyed. Like I said, I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, so I don't really remember it.
You don't know anything about me. And he like snaps the gun in half, the gum in half, and throws it on the fish tank. It just runs. Tom Cruise sprints in every film.
Red light. Fuck yeah.
That's why he's so thin. Yeah. But I mean, he just, one, the man is over 50 years old and he looks amazing.
It's crazy.
He is a tank.
Him and Kevin Bacon, they have back to tanks where they just like float in there and like little robots work on them.
Yeah,
they're both also very short men.
Yes.
Kevin Bacon is?
Yeah.
I knew Tom Cruise was. I knew
Robert Downey Jr. is like 5'7".
I think Kira Sedgwick is taller than Kevin Bacon.
Wow, that's wild.
And that's his wife. I mean,
So, I mean, it's a little nuts, but Collateral is so good. Jamie Foxx, that role was auditioned for by Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
And because they were in
Jerry Maguire
together, he didn't get the part because they would be like, oh,
that's too much of the team of that duo.
Yeah.
And it sucks for Cuba because I don't think Cuba really found something
besides...
He never
recovered after that shit. Nope.
And, Jamie Foxx is Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx, I think that was the same year, because that was 2004, wasn't it?
Yeah, I want to say.
Because that was the same year he did Ray and won the Oscar, so he had a great year.
And I remember...
he's done a lot of fucking awesome shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's fantastic.
I love him in The Soloist. I really want to revisit that movie.
Soloist, Django.
Oh, yeah.
Django killed. What about Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2?
What about it? What about it?
Him rapping that weird thing of like him like being all neurotic. I was like, this is
dumb. I just watched one of those Honest trailers and it was like, watch Sony do the thing that it learned it shouldn't do from the third Spider-Man and put too many fuckers in the second Spider-Man.
And I love how they build that movie. It was like, Rhino's going to be in it. And you're like, fuck yeah. And then it was like the last scene. I was like, damn it.
I'm like looking at my phone. I'm like, it's about to be credit. Oh, here we go.
You're getting Sinister Six, bitch. And then they're like, never mind, we sold it to Marvel. Our bad.
Either way, yeah. Next week.
Yeah, what's up?
Next week.
What's the Test of Tony looking like?
Test of Tony is, oh man, I thought I had one.
Great.
Shut up. Oh, great. Here he goes thinking again. What an ass. Oh. I don't think this one's going to fail.
Well, okay. What is it? The fucking Dune?
No. Oh, never Dune. Dune will never fail. Okay. Now, the only thing that could surpass Dune is Jim Jarmusch's Dune, which never got made. But
the one I like
David
exist. Lynch.
Yeah, I love David Lynch's, but...
David Lynch was supposed to direct Return of the Jedi, and he took all the ideas that he had for that and put them in Dune.
Honestly,
that's sick.
It's cool, because...
That's so fucking crazy. I love that, though.
David Lynch is nuts. Oh, God. But I really would have preferred the Jim Jarmusch. Jarmusch. I don't know how do you say it.
If you ever get... oh, my God. I'm losing his name right now. If you ever get Tim... Fucking... Oh, my God. I'm trying to remember his name right now. But if you get that guy on the main show, get him to do his David Lynch impression, because he's fucking...
Tim Wolf?
Yeah, Tim Wolf.
Yeah, okay. I am David Lynch. Yeah, fucking Ralph Garman is a really good one, too. He just kind of, like, yell all weird and nasally. Tim, but yeah, we had him on the main show, and he did a fucking awesome... God. Yeah, I forgot about
David
that.
Lynch.
I was thinking either...
E.T.
Goonies.
Ooh.
Because I don't know if I'll care for Goonies now. I haven't seen it in years, but I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. That's
Goonies
why I'm saying...
Goonies never say die, man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I don't know. A lot of movies, like, he's like, don't do Blade, dumbass. Mm-hmm. You love it. You know you will.
There's certain movies that I know that he's going to... Like, Dune. Like, he's been trying to do Test of Tony on Dune. I'm like, you're going to like it.
Yeah. Yeah. At least go to something Dune's just one of my favorite films because it's one of my favorite books.
So we'll do Goonies and then... in depth. You picked.
I've got.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. If you have something in mind,
I don't. Starring children.
I don't have anything. Really in mind right now, like off the top
of
my head.
Do you want some more Robert De Niro?
What else you got? Just give me your list.
Ronan was. I was hoping Willis would be like, yeah. Ronan's up your alley. European fucking action film rivals The French Connection in terms of fucking car chase awesomeness.
Roman or Ronin?
Ronin, like a Ronin samurai.
Yeah, okay.
R-O-N-I-N.
Man. So good.
What else you got?
Ronin, Bringing Out the Dead. It's a Scorsese film with Cage that's underrated. But
I think I saw that one.
Yeah, no one did. Michael Clayton. It's a George Clooney role that is totally under the rug for Clooney's
career. I think we said that like that was going to be the next one we did.
That is a slow one, but it is a fucking taut
Michael Clayton
thriller.
Was good. The American was actually really good, too.
Yes, The American was awesome. Yeah. I also brag a lot about Munich in that. Yeah. People don't really see that as one of Spielberg's.
If we ever get laid, if we get laid tonight, it'll be because of Eric Bannon.
What else you got?
Let's see here. The Constant Gardener, Ralph Fiennes,
Voldemort.
Yes. Gone Baby Gone.
Oh yes, that's it.
I haven't
seen
that
shit.
Okay,
do that
gone,
shit.
Gone Baby Gone.
Do my that next one shit. Was Drugstore Cowboy, and I was like, that title will get him. Yeah. If this one doesn't get him,
that title.
Gone Baby Gone is so fucking good.
Oh yeah.
And also one of the greatest fuck you cop lines I've ever heard in my life is somebody, this black guy, somebody get this fucking sausage off my lawn. What?
Oh my God. Say that?
He told him to get this sausage off his lawn. I was like, oh my God.
You're gonna it's gonna be fantastic, yeah.
Ben Affleck's Ben Affleck's first directing role where he just blew me away. I was like, holy shit. You should be behind the camera from now on.
Because Argo is after that, right?
Yeah, way after.
All right,
Gone
cool.
Baby Gone's not, I think it's 2008. Eight, seven, yeah.
So we got Goonies and Gone Baby Gone. I'll figure out a genre 5 and text you about it. But all right, until next time, go burn books.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Podcast Channel production, executive produced by Bob Camparta, Paul Wolf, and Sean Ast. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.podbean.com.